23 seconds after the hour of 12 in this, the month of March in the year of our Lord 2006. Thank you for coming by live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of Johnson 970, a proud part of the CBS radio family. This is the Rick Emerson Show. Broadcasting from the beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon. Thank you for coming by. Let me give you this, the phone number that ye might interact with us. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You want to email today? By gosh, by golly, by gum, it's Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. It is Monday, March 20th. Thank you for coming by. And welcome to Day 12. Coming up later on today, what are people calling now for? See, I say that, but it's just like when I say you can call in now, that's like when someone says, the check is in the mail, or so is your mother. It doesn't really mean anything. You're not supposed to call now. There's nothing to talk about. Anything you have to talk about now, by definition, I probably have no interest in. Oh, whatever. Third hour of the show today, coming up at 2:30, Peter Carlin from the Oregonian is going to be here. And talk about last night's Sopranos, which was superb, by the way, if somewhat disturbing. And I went through I got this whole thing about the Sopranos where, it's not just the Sopranos, it's all TV shows where I'm not much into dream episodes. You know, episodes where the whole thing is just some weird, surrealistic trip through the brain of some guy who's having, like, a long nightmare somewhere. Those kind of things, they typically don't interest me. But last night, the episode went in and out of Tony Soprano's head because he's in a coma. It was fantastic. So we'll talk to Peter Carlin about that. We'll also talk to him about The Shield, which is wrapping up season number 5 tomorrow. Which doesn't even seem possible because it seems like the freaking show just went on like 2 weeks ago. So I don't know what kind of... The rules are not the same for cable television because the regular television networks, they have to run like a 22-episode season. 24 runs 24 episodes. If it is like over on FX, it's just like 5 or 6s and then they're done. So anyway, the season finale of The Shield is coming up tomorrow on FX. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that new David Mamet show that's on as well from him and Sean Ryan, who created The Shield, that show called The Unit. So we'll talk about all of that stuff with Peter Carlin coming up in the third hour of the show. Coming up in this, the news hour, we have an exciting installment of Rick Emerson's Democracy on the March. Also, Clown Watch. We got a double Geek Watch with Futurama news in it. And sometime today, I swear by Holy Christ, we'll get to that top five most influential metal albums of all time. All that, plus your phone calls, emails, etc., etc., so on and so forth. Joining us today at the Control Center, the linchpin, the nerve center, the nucleus of the Rick Emerson Experience, Sarah X. Dillon, who's here today.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm distracted. I shouldn't have looked at my Verizon bill right before we'd go on the air.
And it was how much?
$250. And I don't even use long distance. I don't know what's going on.
And you have a home phone.
And yeah, well, I don't anymore.
Did you get rid of it? Did you finally sack it?
Yeah, I got rid of it. But $250?
But for a moment, let's talk about this for a second. Let's dwell on this, on the satisfying feeling when you call up and tell the phone company that you're no longer going to require a landline. And then there's that, and then scrabbling like mice who are about to be executed in an OHSU lab. They try to convince you to keep it. No, sir, you need a phone though. It's for the love of God. And you're I'm going to be canceling it all. And they say, well, don't, what about internet? And you say, no. And you're just checking off the things one by one that you're going to be losing from them.
And I'm just looking forward to, if this doesn't get taken care of, all I have to do is pay $175 to get out of my contract with Verizon.
Wait, so the cost to get out of it is actually less than the bill?
It would actually be less than my bill.
Clearly what you should do is anytime you exceed your bill, you should just get out of your contract. Why would everybody not do that?
I don't know. Maybe they require you to pay the bill along. Well, of course, they probably do along with the payment to get out of it. But if this is how it's going to be, I'm not going to be a customer.
Now, are you talking outside your hours, outside your minutes?
No. I don't know what's going on. Everyone that I talk to is, in the Verizon network. And $250.
And you do all your calling late at night anyway, probably.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
all your friends are out drinking and boozing it up and so forth.
It's true.
So does it break out exactly?
No. It just says, like, peak minutes, off-peak minutes, and then a bam, $250.
I bet they just make stuff up because they know that people know that nobody checks it.
Yeah, so I'm not looking forward to that. I'm going to go and talk to them after the show.
Yeah, that'll be productive
yeah.
and fun. That won't be a frustrating experience at all. In the Johnson 970 newsroom, it's Tim Riley working on the following stories for you today.
Well, on this third anniversary of the Iraq War, the acting prime minister of that fledgling democracy says, they're in the Civil War. Oh, no, you're not, says Dick Cheney. We're making rapid progress, SW, but expect plenty more bloodshed. The battle is not lost, boasts a battle-hardened general. Robert Blake strives to pay back the $30 million he owes his dead wife's family by taking a job as a ranch hand, but he'd rather be directing. And South Dakota motorists must exercise caution today as they deal with whiteout conditions. We'll have the latest Metro traffic report for that.
CNN puts up the most random sound bites. You go to the CNN news site every morning, and it's like they've just thrown darts to decide exactly what news stories are going to cover and what to give a sound on. I went there today, and there was a whole passel of stories about all the traffic conditions in South Dakota, which apparently affects us all in some way that I can't quite explicate at the moment. It's 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. So we'll talk about all that. And plus, I have this big pile of smooth jazz CDs from the kitchen. Because apparently, there was some station in the building that was smooth jazz, but they haven't smooth jazz for years, right? Hadn't there been like at least two formats between then and now?
Yeah. It's kind of a jinxed frequency.
That was Tim Riley who said that. So they're just getting rid of all the smooth. They just stacked it in the kitchen. By the way, and it might be telling about why that frequency was less than successful, that the CDs have been sitting there for 4 days untouched. No one wants them. They just... And, you know, radio people will steal anything. Radio people pick up anything that's not nailed down. Anything that is not covered in anthrax powder, they'll pick up and take home or to a pawn shop. Smooth jazz CDs sitting there like so many musical stalagmites. It is piled all over the table, going nowhere. So,
maybe a little sticky note that says plenty of trans fat. Might clear up that collection.
That's fantastic. Anyway. So we'll do that and other things. Ladies and gentlemen, I have all this stuff to get through, but I'm not even going to try to pack it in before the news. So let's go to the city desk with Tim Riley.
From high atop the bottom of the coin tower in downtown Portland, Oregon, CBS presents the City Desk News Beat. Tim Riley reporting. And we begin this Monday with Democracy on the March.
Here's Rick Emerson's Democracy on the March. Oh, whoa, that was completely... What happened there?
I don't know.
There was two things playing at once.
I do not know.
Six. All right, hold on. Are we ready? Okay.
Democracy on the March. The third anniversary of war that they once suspected to be over by now, the president and senior officials argued Sunday that their strategy was working.
Come on, for the love of God.
Despite violence in Iraq.
Let's stop for a second.
Yes.
Stop.
Yes.
Get a hold of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the really amusing part is, it is amusing if you're not us or somebody trying to make this show run properly today. Before we came in, like 5 minutes ago, I was talking to the general manager, and he was congratulating me on how flawlessly the show was going. It's fantastic. It doesn't sound like there's any technical glitches at all.
Oh, man.
It sounds like you've really hit the ground running. That's exactly what we were hoping for when we hired you here at CBS Radio. You would execute the program flawlessly and without incident. And now he's screwed up like three things inside of a minute and a half.
Yeah, maybe they're just bats in the belfry today.
It's because this is... Here's why.
So does it auto-link to the next clip?
Okay, here's what's happening.
Let's take out the schematic diagram and take a look, shall we?
Here's the problem. Is that... When we were at, Fisher, we used the Audio Vault system. When we were at Entercom, we used the Enco system to play back. This is the system we use to play back all of our audio cuts.
Yes.
Now that we're here, we have this weird, it's like this weird hybrid zombie thing that should not be conglomeration of two systems. We have the Audio Vault, and then we have all this stuff that I play off my own desktop. I have this PC here in front of me, and I play all this stuff off of the Windows Media Player. But of course, because Microsoft never met a program that they didn't like to make as bloated and as useless as possible, it's got all of these functions that I can't turn off. And you all know what I'm talking about. Like, if you work in an office where everything is run through Microsoft programs, you know that it's impossible to actually find the command or the button to change anything. Like, in any Microsoft, and this is Microsoft, this is Windows Media Player. And it's impossible to alter it, to tweak it, to fix it, to change it, to make anything run properly. I was trying to rip a CD, like, I the CD of my home the other day. It was just some audio production stuff. There's stuff to use, like the top five. I brought it in, and I go to rip it, and it says, this error window comes up, and it says, we're having difficulty ripping this CD. Turn on auto correction to solve this problem. All of which would be fine if there were in any way I could find the auto-correction feature. It's a hallmark of the Microsoft design system, by the way, that they will give you a help window or an error message that says, turn on auto-correct feature to solve this problem. But then when you go to the help folder, when you go to the help index, it doesn't recognize the term auto-correct. It's sort of a software scavenger hunt. My point is, then I'm playing half of these sound bites off Windows Media Player, and it's got the looping function on, and I have no way to turn it off. It's this sort of zombified media program that just it keeps coming no matter what you do to it. So let's just move forward, Tim. Go ahead and start with whatever you were.
Well, displaying a carefully celebrated mix of optimism about eventual victory and caution about how long it'll take, Mr. Bush, Vice President Cheney, and Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, remember him? Sounded much like they did on the first anniversary of the invasion, but they didn't have the well-done banner out. Oh, by the way, the interim prime minister, until he gets shot, Ayed Alawi of Iraq, once hailed by Mr. Bush as the kind of fair-minded leader we need, declared in an interview with the BBC that his country was nearing a point of no return. It is unfortunate we are in a civil war, said he. You're not in a civil war, said Dick Cheney. We'll let you know when that happens. John Reid, a British defense secretary, said the battle for Iraq is not lost yet.
The situation in Iraq is serious, but it is not terminal. The situation encompasses an increase in sectarian violence, but it is not a civil war.
There it goes again, trying to play everything from the beginning. I have no idea why. All right, so it's not a civil war, so remember for a while it was an insurgency.
We don't have a name for it now.
Then it wasn't an insurgency. Then it was guerrilla fighting. Then it wasn't guerrilla fighting. Then it was like
a few last dead enders.
Dead enders, that's what Rumsfeld was calling
them. Throw of dead enders.
And it is telling, by the way, that as soon as he made that statement, that was like the last day anybody heard it from Donald Rumsfeld. They stashed.
Oh no, we've heard from him again.
Broom closet somewhere.
Because years and years ago, back in his prime, any discussion of World War II makes people feel good. So he says, now, if we leave Iraq right now, it'll be like giving Germany back to the Nazis.
Yes, that's exactly.
Everybody over 80 can appreciate that kind of thing.
That's exactly what it's like. And I was watching Real Time with Bill Maher this weekend, and there was some woman on from Florida, and she was making that. Well, imagine that it was 1943, and that's totally the analogy. Whenever you can't defend what you're doing, that's the last refuge of a guy who is talking out of his ass, is to bring up the, well, what if we'd left Germany in 1940? You know, and then, so.
Bring out the Betty Grable poster.
Exactly.
And then President Bush said more bloodshed must happen.
There will be more days of sacrifice and tough fighting before the victory is achieved. Yet by helping the Iraqis defeat the terrorists in their land, we bring greater security to our own.
Whatever. Oh, by the way, there were thousands of people marching for peace downtown, but nobody really cares anymore.
No, I was trying to.
There's not going to be any peace.
No, we're the biggest bleeding hearts you'll ever find on this program. It is like this was yesterday, right?
Yeah, thousands.
Because the whole weekend kind of blurs together for me. I made this mistake on Friday. I took all this melatonin because my sleep schedule's been all thrown off. Because first I was on unemployed time, and unemployed time is basically you just sleep until the sun wakes you up. And then you shuffle around your house, Howard Hughes style, in a bathrobe, trying to fill like 12 hours until your wife gets home. And then as soon as you know that she's leaving work, you spring into action and try to make it look like you shave and try to make it look like you've been doing things. Like, you know, I shove some things into the dishwasher and go, well, I've been hard at work. Yeah, I'm going to put in those rain gutters. I think I'm going to add a dining room onto this side of the house. So I'm trying to get back on a normal schedule. So I went home Friday. And I can't take, like, normal sleeping pills because they don't have any effect on me. All they do is they make me dopey. So I took all of this melatonin so I could try to sleep normally through the weekend, and it put me into a coma.
And so the whole weekend.
Marilyn Monroe style?
Exactly. And so the whole weekend is just one long, because you know, like when you think back in your brain, the days are segmented into compartments. But for me, the whole weekend is just one long blur. But I bicycled downtown to see V for Vendetta yesterday, which it was fantastic. We'll talk about that in a little while. But it's like I was trying to get somewhere, and then it's like sometimes you forget where you live, and then it's like you turn a corner, and there's like 9,000 nitwits in clown hats and drums, walking along the streets, demanding an end to the war, and it's just sad. It's just,
you're wasting your time.
And they really are. Look, and like I'm no fan of the acts of the last 3 years. I don't think anybody is, but I mean, you should give it up. You're just wasting time. You could be at home. Yeah, you know, you could be doing anything. And if you need, by the way, more prima facie evidence that what you're doing is useless. And I don't mean to sound like a negative and Nelly here, but come on. As I'm trying to, and of course they're in my way, and I'm trying to engage in capitalism. I'm trying to go to the movie theater and spend my hard-earned dollars to support the American economy by seeing this film. Mm-hmm. And I can't get to where I'm going because there's a bunch of guys in Church of Elvis shirts blocking my way. And they're sitting there, and and the stench of like underarm filth and reefer fills the air. And the absolute proof that everything you're doing in this anti-war march yesterday is useless is that you're using all the same signs from 3 years ago. That red, white, and blue "No Iraq War" sign that looks like the John Kerry sign with the little stars on it. It's exactly the same thing they used in 2003. So if you want evidence of exactly how useless your whole movement is, look no further than that sign.
Meanwhile, there is some good news. 92 Oregon guardsmen came back from Afghanistan. So now Afghanistan is up for grabs again. We also have some problems with Iran, I suppose. Fantastic. And, the president says we're not going to fight there. Instead, he's going to use international diplomacy.
A message from not only the United States, but also Great Britain and France and Germany, as well as Russia, hopefully, and China, in order to say loud and clear to the Iranians, this is unacceptable behavior. Your desire to have a nuclear weapon is unacceptable. A message from not only...
All right. Don't they already have nuclear weapons, though?
Well,
Pakistan?
I don't know. All these countries, they just draw lines on the map and give them a different name.
I can never tell what somebody's done to irritate us today, what they've done that was unacceptable, that was acceptable last week. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody really knows.
No.
All right.
No. So with that in mind, let's close out Democracy on
There's another installment of Democracy on the March. Excellent. Here's Tim Riley at the City Desk.
Some people are spending their time more wisely than doing peace protests. A motorist driving 120 miles an hour with no lights in the Sandy area rolled over several times, ejecting the driver. Police say the chase lasted only about 7 minutes. The condition of the driver is unknown.
Who cares?
Apparently, the vehicle may have been stolen during a robbery, but nobody seems to know. Let's see here. Clackamas County Sheriff's deputy saw the man driving the car westbound on Highway 26 near the city of Sandy with no lights on. The driver continued while dramatically increasing speed to an estimated 120 miles an hour. Here's a wannabe. A commercial truck driver faces reckless driving charges after allegedly being clocked at only 96 miles an hour on I-84. Yes?
Nothing.
I mean, that's only, he's going to do a little bit better than that. No. 96. And he's driving a Freightliner truck. Let's see, it was an empty trailer, so he's been paid for it. Meanwhile, in Germany, where all good things come from, what did I do with that story?
Okay. I spent $1,000 today.
A 40-year-old German man who claimed he was mentally ill decapitated his wife and then showed up at a gas station carrying her severed head.
Oh, my God.
Officers went to the man's nearby home where they found the rest of the woman's body and their two young daughters. They will not identify the man, who left the head in the snow at a Hamburg gas station in a working-class neighborhood. The 40-year-old man appeared confused and said he had killed his wife. The motive is not immediately known. The man told police he was mentally ill. This will be investigated further.
No, I just don't... You know, there's people who cut off all of these limbs. I mean, it's like I have hangnails sometimes I can't get off. You know what I mean? It's like that's a lot of work to go. I wouldn't even know how to do it. I don't even know what sort of implements are required. I don't know if you require some. If you have to have a hacksaw, if you can do it with just things that are laying around the house. It is a whole lot of removing of body parts and limbs and so forth in this world. And it shows more initiative than I think I would have.
A Florida fair worker has been hospitalized after he put his hand into a tiger cage in an attempt to communicate with the animal. Jason Harden, who's 25, stuck his hand into the tiger's cage at 2:25 in the morning.
What was the message? The message he was trying to send is, I am deeply stupid.
He decided to communicate with the animal. The white tiger bit the man and severed a tendon in his arm.
That's fantastic. I love it when stuff like that happens.
Now, for everyone listening in South Dakota, let's get the latest from Metro traffic on your whiteout road conditions today.
The visibility is good, and there is small amounts of precipitation, snow, in the form of snow in various areas of western South Dakota. But the thing that they're encountering now are very slippery roads.
There's snow in the form of snow. Jesus God.
That's an intense investigation. They sent three cruisers out.
Oh, man.
Well, with a pair of tweezers and a jar to bring it back to the station as evidence. This is snow in the form of snow.
Jesus God. You know, there's this whole section to this country we could just kick out to sea, man. We could probably raise the mean IQ like 35 points by lunchtime if we just started getting rid of some of these places. Good God almighty. Should we break? Let's break here.
Sure.
Coming up, we have Clyde Lewis from ClydeLewis.com and Ground Zero. He's going to talk to us about what's going on in his world. Later on, we have Jim Roop coming up, as well as Gary Baumgarten, also the top five. Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. Geek Watch, all of that on the way. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere.
There goes the last DJ, who plays what he wants to play, and says what he wants to say, hey, hey, hey. And there goes your freedom of choice, there goes the last human voice.
It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's Monday, Johnson 970 is what you are listening to. A proud part of the CBS radio family. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. All right, from this moment on, we are going to do nothing but flawless delivery. Everything about this program is going to be performed without error, glitch, or incident from right now. All right. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com, by the way. It's 503-733-2970. By the way, I'd like to thank listener Jessica for hooking us up with this. I got this chair, finally. Because, you know, I've been having to stand for all 3 hours, which I know. I realize that listening back to some of the shows, me talking about how I have to stand for 3 hours, it's not. I know that I don't necessarily generate large amounts of sympathy, because somewhere out there, there's a guy who has to put, like, fish guts in a bag for 8 hours a day, you know, for, like, 14 cents an hour somewhere. So it's not like I got the hardest life on earth, but I was having to stand for all. And so I got this chair, which is admittedly very tall, because the counter where all of my stuff is, as I've noted, is like right at nipple level. And so this chair is exceptionally tall. It is still about 4 inches short from what I need. So it is actually tall enough now, though, that my feet don't touch the ground. So I am now on top of a chair with my feet dangling in the breeze.
Like you should bring a pillow in or something to sit on.
Yeah, that won't be embarrassing. Sit under the yellow pages.
Your feet are already dangling midair. I don't think you could be any more embarrassed.
Yeah, it's true. Coming up later on, Peter Carlin from the Oregonian, also Gary Baumgarten from CNN Radio. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from ClydeLewis.com, the host of Ground Zero and the Ground Zero Lounge, our good friend Clyde Lewis. How are you, Clyde?
I'm doing really well. In fact, I just want to let everybody know that if you haven't seen V for Vendetta, you need to see it now.
That's exactly what I told
Rick. Yeah, Sarah and I both saw that this weekend.
What'd you think of it?
No, it was fantastic.
It was awesome.
Yeah,
it was
good.
A fantastic film. And one of the things that I think a lot of people probably didn't even think about was that when that film was released...
Whatever happened to hello? How are you doing, Rick? How's your day?
Hello.
Just pick up the phone and you're just immediately on some tirade about taking down the man and Revolution Now.
No, how you doing? I just
don't pretend like you care. Clearly,
no, I do care. I mean, I just kind of been. I've had a very busy weekend, and I've been dealing with a lot of crap, and of course, working at a school and getting people all hooked up with college is kind of a fun thing to do. But you know, it's like, and they only give me so much time to be on the phone. In fact, my boss was kind of looking at me, going, "You realize you're doing this on your lunch?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And so it's kind of like I live in the Dilbert field right now.
Now, Tim Riley was actually wondering earlier because we told everybody that you. You did actually the smart thing. You did what every guy in radio... There's this whole well-known dynamic in radio that whenever a station goes off the air, guy gets fired, he gets canned, he gets whatever.
Yeah.
He always swears that he's out of radio forever.
Right.
And I remember when I won't say his name, but there's a friend of ours who we worked with over at Fisher, an engineer who we worked with there, and who is now again employed. Like, when they changed the format, he was, "Screw this! I'm leaving radio!" Which is what everybody says. You, though, have actually gotten, like, a real stable, normal job.
And he is the only one in the history of radio who's been able to pull this off.
You, the one least likely. You've actually found something
that's... Least likely?
Huh? Well, I mean, not like anybody who points to you as a model of stable living. I mean, I think we can all say that. No, it's because you walk to your own path. You're cut from a different cloth. You march to a different drummer. You're out there on your own, a rebel, a loner.
I've been an independent broadcaster, an independent businessman now for a long time. And to actually say that I'm going to go work for the man is kind of a difficult thing for me to do. But
Tim,
I'm kind of working for the man now. I really wish I wouldn't be
Beaverton
working
beckons.
For the man.
Tim was wondering if you are, in fact, a life coach.
A life coach?
Yeah.
No, actually, I'm an admissions advisor. I basically get students into school and advise them on how they should plan their careers and how they should plan their lives around their college educations. So that's what I do. I'm kind of a counselor and an admissions advisor and it's a mixture of high pressure sales versus high pressure counseling, high pressure, you know, it's all high pressure and I have the ulcers to show it. So that's what's going on right now.
Well, excellent.
It could be worse. It could be something like doggy steps or something.
So, I mean, that's what I'm doing. And then, of course, I do my shows. I do them online, and I do them, at Dante's every Monday night. And last week, some guy threatened to beat the hell out of me because I was talking about something that ticked him off. I mean, it gets pretty crazy there. I mean, we got the huge crowds come out, and, we've had TV there. I don't know if you know this, but we had Pink perform about 2 or 3 weeks ago there.
Yes, I know. I've gotten, like, 800 emails from people who said that you and Pink, now is it, did you and Pink sang karaoke together?
Yeah, we did. We actually sang, she had me get up and sing me and Bobby McGee with her on stage, and it was really interesting because she's going to be playing Janis Joplin in a new movie.
Now, was she, dumb question, was she performing? Was she in town?
She was actually on the street wanting to go do karaoke from hell at Dante's, and she came in and heard me speak, and as I was up there speaking, she came right up on stage, she looked at me and she said, "You know, what you're saying to me is inspiring me tonight, I would like to sing a song." And I looked at her and I said, "Are you Pink?" And she winked at me and she said, "Yes." And I said, "Am I supposed to say anything?" And she says, "No." And I wasn't supposed to announce who she was, but she says, "But I want to sing on your show at the end when you're done speaking." And so she sang a song called "Dear Mr. President," which is this song that's going to be her second hit, "Stupid Girls." And I have a copy of it raw, singing at Dante's a cappella, that I'm going to release on my website on April 4th. I have permission to release it as a special
now,
song. So, I mean, and I have it in my possession. No one else has a copy.
All right, Sarah, was she doing a show or something? Why was she here?
Well, I know she has a new album. Has she released her new album, Clyde?
Yeah, she has. She was promoting her album, but I think her husband was also in town for some motocross
thing. Oh, that's right. Yeah, because she's...
Hart.
But she came in and wanted to keep very silent about who she was. And
well, it's good to see you holding up your end of the bargain.
I thought that at the end of the night, she'd probably just up and leave after she sang. But no, she invited me to her table. We had drinks. And then she was called up to sing karaoke. And she said, "I can't get up there now." And I says, "Well, you better get up there. They want you to get up there." And she says, "No, you come up and sing with me." So there I was standing there singing me and Bobby McGee, which is completely out of my range.
Now, you can't do all that. You can't talk about all this and then not give us the song to play.
Well,
if you've got a copy of you and Pink singing a duet.
Well, no, I don't have a copy of me and Pink singing a duet. What I have is a copy of Pink singing a song called "Dear Mr. President."
All right. Oh, I see. And you're gonna hold that. That's gonna be like your.
Yeah, and I'm gonna release it on my site, but I could also release it on your show
if you would like
to debut it, because Pink is really, her career is really hot right now. I mean, she did get a Grammy, but I mean, her stuff right now, her song "Stupid Girls" is I guess in the top 10 or the top 5 right now.
Yeah, the video's great, too.
Oh, that's where she's making fun of the Lindsay Lohans and the Mandy Moores of the world and so
exactly.
forth.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, but it was really interesting because I recognized her. And not only that, but she's a student at my school. So that's kind of fun, too.
I don't understand. This whole conversation is so confusing to me. All right. So you saw...
Okay, I want to know what you meant by that.
What do you mean she's a student at your school?
She attends my school.
What school?
The school that I'm at, which is American Intercontinental University. She attends American Intercontinental University.
Pink.
Yeah, she does. I mean, I know her real name. She's also my friends list on my MySpace account.
Okay, you're making up. Pink does not go to school. Does not go to a correspondence school in Beaverton.
It's not a correspondence school.
You
this
know
is a
what?
Real college.
Okay, I'm just saying, why would Pink need to go to school anywhere? She's Pink.
She wants to get her master's degree in psychology.
What are you talking about?
Because she doesn't want to direct.
She wants to get her master's degree in psychology.
Okay.
We discussed this when I was having drinks with her the other day.
Are you sure this isn't a thing that, like, you dropped acid and dreamed?
This is reality. This is Clyde giving you reality here. I'm not lying. I did have drinks with Pink. I discussed her education. I discussed the fact that she does attend the school that I'm at.
You gave Pink education advice?
No, I didn't give her any advice. She did say, though, that she would like me to be her counselor, like to have me be her administrator, but I have to go through all kinds of paperwork to get that done, so it's not done yet.
Wait, so is she still in town?
No.
I don't understand what's going on
she's
anywhere.
Go to college.
Our school. Well, see, I'm over the online department. She's an online student.
Okay.
And so, being over the online department, you know, online college.
Become a psychiatrist online.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, okay. She's getting her degree online because she can't. She can't do it at a conventional college because she's, you know, traveling and touring and doing all that stuff. So she does it online between her concerts.
It's all very bizarre. All right. We're running out of time. So you saw V for Vendetta though, but I know that that's a movie right up your alley.
Oh, it is, and it's tremendous. And tonight, Dante's. I'm sure we're going to discuss some of it. Not all of it, because I don't want to give all of it away. But what I want to do is I want to discuss how it was so interesting and so fascinating. They released it on the date that we bombed the heck out of Iraq, and then as I was attending it with Sadie Gregg at the movie theater, we walked outside and they were doing the protests. So it was interesting to see all those people, you know, protesting against their situation and seeing the protests outside. I thought it was kind of a strange dichotomy that was going on at the time. And not only that, but some other things I wanted to talk about too at Dante's tonight, where I don't know if you've noticed this, but there's been a number of people who've been using their SUVs as weapons of mass destruction. They've been basically taking out schools and taking out people, and I kind of find that to be a strange synchronicity that people are beginning to realize that cars can be used as
weapons. I'm all for that.
You're all for that.
I'm all for that. Doesn't matter to me. Don't have any kids, don't have an SUV, don't care about people who do. All right, what time do you speak at Dante's tonight?
I'll be speaking tonight at Dante's at 8 p.m. I get up on stage and I rant and rave, and other people rant and rave too. It's a big participation show. We're getting ready to do another gig with the History Channel. They're going to be showing up soon. I'll be giving more details about that. I just had a call that they want to come out and cover it. I mean, this is a big thing. I mean, what we're doing here is something that's not been done anywhere in the country, and a lot of people are recognizing it, and they're bringing out camera crews to come and film it. So you may get a chance to be on TV. You may meet Pink. You may meet somebody else. Heck, Lemmy's been there before. A few other people show up every once in a while. They just show up because Dante's is a place to hang out.
Hey, Clyde, so are you going to be talking about your perspective on V for Vendetta today?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I wanted to hear what you thought about that.
Okay, yeah, I'll talk about it.
Yeah, it's a good movie.
It's at ClydeLewis.com. See him tonight at the Ground Zero Lounge at Dante's. All right, man, I'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
All right, there you go. So
if you need to speak with a psychiatrist, you can talk to Peyton. So
apparently it's just one-stop shopping there. You can stop in, you can hear your conspiracy theories and find some booze and get career advice. Jesus. Good God. I mean, even by Clyde standards, it was an insane call. Hold on. Oh, I'm sorry. I dropped the name. Let me pick that up. Let me just... All right. I don't even know where... There's no sense in even talking about it because with Clyde, it's so hard with that guy. He's like Kaiser Soze. It's like trying to distinguish what really happens from what happens, like, inside that guy's head.
It's synergy.
Here's the thing is, I've been around Clyde a long time, though. I've known Clyde, what year is this, 2006? So I've known Clyde for 12 years now. And I've been working with Clyde for over a decade. And I've learned that it's always the things that Clyde says that you think are fake or that he's making up. And that's always the stuff that's true. You know, it's always the other stuff that's like that's fabricated. You know, like, but the stuff that just sounds so unreal and sounds so over the top that you would never believe it could be true. That's always the stuff that really happens to that guy. So,
God, it's like reality television without the camera rolling.
Really is. He truly is a bizarre human being. All right, here's Tim Riley at the City Desk.
Well, let's talk about some dead Russians, shall we?
Excellent.
Russia's consumer rights watchdog, apparently they have one, said that 35,900 people died from alcohol poisoning in 2005.
What a thankless job that's got to be, trying to be a guy in Russia who's like a consumer, who tries to figure out what's dangerous for you in that country.
Mm-hmm. At least they're able to count their own dead now. Back in the days of Stalin, you really couldn't put your finger on the number. The preliminary report published by the Federal Service for the Supervision of Consumer Protection and Welfare says 13.4% of all accidental deaths in Russia are caused by poisoning from alcohol
no.
and alcohol derivatives.
I'm amazed.
In 2003 and 2004, alcohol poisoning caused 40,567 and 42,715 deaths, respectively.
I suppose that wouldn't be the case if they weren't having to drink their own pee and like lighter fluid and hydraulic fluid to get a little high.
The officials are especially worried about the rise of teenage alcoholism, 17.7 per 100,000 people. In 2004, the number of people suffering from alcoholism reached 2,369,241. But that only constitutes 1.6% of the population.
So
it's really not hurting anybody.
So they've got some ceiling room there. They've got some headroom to expand.
It's like your own private gulag without leaving the privacy of your one-room home.
They had this brilliant idea. In Russia, they had this idea that they thought was fantastic for getting rid of alcoholism. Because I don't know what it was. They said that like a fifth of vodka, I forget how much they said it. The fifth of vodka, it cost, I don't know, like the equivalent of like $35 American or something. It was, you know, it was not incredibly expensive, but I mean a little pricey. And so they had this idea that the curb drinking, they would just make vodka cost like $5,000 a bottle. And that was, and somehow they couldn't really see like the obvious implications of this the way that everybody here in this room probably can.
It's like raising the price of cigarettes.
It's exactly what it is, except when you raise the price of cigarettes here, people just start selling their kids and their possessions and whatever to buy them. In Russia, there's nothing. What are you going to sell? Here, have some. I got toenails. What are you? Dirt? What are you? I got dirt. Here, have some dirt. There's nothing. There's nothing to sell. So when you raise the price of vodka in Russia that much, all of these people just start going and start drinking stuff off the driveway. That's all it is, man. You just start drinking whatever you can drain out of your car engine every morning. And so there was my favorite story, which I probably told before, but my favorite story out of Russia was that there was this huge fear that if Russia ever tried to engage in a nuclear exchange with somebody, or they tried to, God forbid, engage in first-strike nuclear attack, that they wouldn't be able to do it, and all the warheads would just stay inside the silo and explode and destroy the entire country because the missile silos couldn't open their doors because all the hydraulic fluid had been drained out and consumed by the guys who worked there, which is great on, like, five different levels. A, it implies that the guys who man missile silos are just drunk all the time in Russia. And B, it's that there's the guys who man missile silos can't afford a bottle of vodka, and so they just drink all the stuff that opens up the bay doors. So as soon as they press that button, man, it's go time. That whole country's just going to be one big cinder. So that country, Russia's a country that's going to continue to keep us amused for many, many, many years to come.
Thank goodness they're around. Time now for not a single, but a double Geekwatch.
Here at Geekwatch.
This high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
It's just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn shit. You got it?
There it does.
A bus driver has been fired for playing the computer game Grand Theft Auto while at the wheel. Stephen Alcott was reported by terrified passengers who heard the scream of characters being butchered as he drove between stops. Bosses fired him after onboard closed-circuit television footage showed that he had the handheld device on his knees. One passenger said he was playing on a Sony PlayStation PSP. Not only at bus stops, but at traffic lights, and sometimes while driving, the music and sound effects could be heard throughout the bus. I find it hard to believe that anyone in charge of a bus capable of carrying 50 people would be safe driving with a PSP on their knees. Steve used the console, like the one with Grand Theft Auto on, as he drove his single-decker bus.
You know, you got to admire, the guys at Rockstar Video Games, or the people who make Grand Theft Auto, I mean, they're such masters of this. I mean, you remember that whole, and this is a thing we were off the air for, but that whole ruckus that erupted last year about all the so-called raw sex and debauchery that was present in Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Where you said, if you hacked the game, you could access this this level, which I saw, which was like all this hilarious pixelated sex going on. And now there's this. Yeah, it's like those guys are just, those guys are the unsurpassed masters of finding negative publicity to promote their game, which is a game I'm not even really into, Grand Theft Auto. I find it's just not my style of video game. But, I mean, there's no one better, these guys, than getting into the news with that.
And now, Geek Watch Part 2. Futurama star Billy West has said another 26 episodes of the animated show are in the pipeline. But after the comments on his website attracted huge interest from fans of the actor who provides a voice for Fry, apparently he backpedaled. Earlier this year, it was announced that Matt Groening's animated sci-fi comedy would be brought back for 4 feature-length straight-to-DVD movies. But on his website, West said, we're doing 26 new episodes for Futurama on TV, and we're hammering out the deal now. The original plan was to have the DVDs first, but that's no longer the case. I'm totally jammed, dude. Whatever that means. Continue. The show was canned by America's Fox Network in 2003, but strong DVD sales and syndication deals convinced studio chiefs there was more life in the show. However, yesterday, Wes suggested this excitement and the new series have been premature after his original post was repeated across the Internet. He wrote, quote, I'm getting different bits of info that say this news may not be the case.
He's just making stuff up, and I'm not going to believe anything. It was very much like with the Return of His program, where I know you guys, like Tim and Sarah, because they've been hearing me for months now. I mean, since like last August. No, we're close to a deal.
Then time comes. Aren't you excited? Oh, yeah. Very excited. Very excited.
Yeah, there's no excitement left.
Like, seriously, like about it took about 7 months for this, you know, from the very start of the negotiations to us being on the air on the 13th. And by the time we actually came on the air, it's like everybody was just so exhausted and nobody had our reservoir of excitement had been used up. It was gone.
Here I am getting off the train, walking to work. I am here. Door opens.
And so it is with Futurama. I'm not going to believe it until it's back on the air, until I'm actually sitting there in my chair and I turn on the television and I actually see the Futurama opening credits. I'm not going to, because Billy West, who was the voice of not only Philip J. Fry, but he was also the voice of Professor Farnsworth and the voice of a couple of the other characters. He said this like three, this is the fourth time he said this now, that they're coming back. And it's, you know, it's just, I think it's one of those things that it's like he says it because he thinks that if he says it, it will therefore happen. I think he's trying to will it into existence. And it's just not the case. And you see him interviewed, and he's such a bitter bastard about it anyway. I mean, he's carrying a colossal grudge about it. To this day, about the canceling of Futurama. So I think he's just trying to make it happen by repeatedly saying it on his message board.
It could happen. It happened to us.
Yes, dreams can come true.
Production of the DVDs will start in July or August for a likely release early in 2007.
Well, I mean, and it did work for Family Guy. That's the thing, is a Family Guy DVD, which I'm, and you know, everybody knows I'm not a big fan of Family Guy, but the Family Guy. I'm not a fan of the Seth MacFarlane, but everybody knows that it's DVD sales and the ratings that show generated in reruns on the Cartoon Network that you know, resulted in it coming back on the air. So there you go, there's your double geek watch.
By Grabthar's hammer, by the sons of Warband, I shall avenge you.
Next. Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
Here's Tim Riley at the City Desk.
Okay, let's talk about the son of Jim Croce, because we've all been asking. Apparently, Jim Croce's son has established his own identity.
Is this an actual story?
This is an actual story, because we're all wondering.
I'm sorry. Let's find out about the son of Jim Croce.
AJ Croce loves performing live.
You know, if they see me on stage, I think that they recognize that I'm holding my back and that I'm really sincere about what I'm doing.
He also loves coming up with new material.
It's about carrying on the tradition of classic songwriting, and I think that
was it a slow day at CNN?
Start of my career to now, that hasn't changed.
For more info, go to ajcroce.com. John Lawrence, CNN.
Sorry, was there nothing else happening?
No, this is a new correspondent, apparently, whose name is spelled wrong.
Oh, he's at the bottom of the list.
Yeah.
Give him the Croce story.
Yeah, just talk over the music the entire time.
Well, what do I do? I don't know. Just play a soundbite from his website and give the domain. That's it?
No, we have one more here.
All right.
We're going to let him speak.
All right, let's see.
A.J. Croce, son of the late Jim Croce.
All right.
You know, for me, it's about carrying on a tradition of classic songwriting. And I think that from the start of my career to now, that hasn't changed. You know,
So this is like the South Dakota, the snow in the form of snow soundbite.
That's right.
So they're hard at work over there at CNN, really breaking the big stories about AJ Croce. I've never even heard. Is he a known performer?
No.
I've never even heard of AJ Croce. Well, all right, there you go.
He plays at more intimate venues.
his appeal is more selective. Oh, God. All right, well, there you go. It's about time we had some A.J. Croce news on the show. Thank you. All right.
A Roxbury, Massachusetts man who allegedly brandished a nail gun during a fist fight has died of head injuries, allegedly inflicted by a neighbor who had a baseball bat. 31-year-old Frederick Montgomery died at Brigham and Women's Hospital of head trauma suffered when he was struck more than once in the head with an aluminum baseball bat, said a spokesman for the Boston Police Department. Police found Montgomery lying face down in the entryway of his Roxbury triple-decker, a resident of a different apartment in the Wigglesworth Street building. Told police he struck Montgomery with a bat during a fight.
You sure this didn't take place in a Ziggy comic strip or something?
That's what it says. Apparently, Montgomery came at him with a nail gun in an argument. The nail gun was found on the floor at the scene.
Where would you even get a nail gun to come at a gun? I don't understand. All right, so there's two guys, and they're where? They're in his apartment?
They're on Wigglesworth Street. And apparently some argument ensues.
An argument ensued?
Probably like over baseball, or red soccer, whatever. Baked beans, whatever they argue about there.
So it's a fist fight. And I don't know what... Doesn't it seem like they're...
One came out another one with a nail gun, okay, but it was stupid because he had a aluminum bat.
Doesn't it seem, though... Look, and I don't get into a lot of fights, but doesn't it seem like in your head, like, point A is a fist fight, or verbal fisticuffs.
Yes.
And point, like, Q is the nail gun. So I don't understand what happens in your head. Like, what could the guy possibly say about your mother? You know, like, what insult could possibly be uttered that you would immediately go to nail gun? And that you would have one around? And, I mean, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but nail guns have to be plugged into a wall? Don't you have to plug them into any of the...
I'm not sure.
Don't they have to be hooked up to, like, an air... To a
oh, I think...
To a compressor?
A compressor.
Because they're all air-powered. Yeah. Like, when you fire a nail gun, it's all... Mm-hmm. And in the background, it has the compressed air thing going. So does he just have the... He just has a plugged-in nail gun hooked up to a compressor just sitting around his living room in
maybe
case...
Maybe he's like a handyman.
In case some sort of dispute should break out. Mm-hmm. And then the other guy has what? A bat?
An aluminum bat.
Well, how embarrassing is that? Not only do you jump the gun, you go right for the nail gun, but look, if you can't win a fight with a nail gun, I mean, really, what it doesn't speak well for your combative abilities.
A former resident of the apartment building, who asked his name not be used, said Montgomery lived on the first floor apartment for about a year, and he seemed to be personal. He was friendly. He would say hello every day. It's just unbelievable. Now he's dead.
Well, there you go. All right, let's take a break here. Good God Almighty. We come back. We come back, we've got CNN Radio's Jim Roop. Later on, Gary Baumgarten from CNN Radio. Peter Carlin from The Oregonian. The top five, all of that. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland on Johnson 970. You stay there.